Welcome back to part two of the podcast, where we get to know more about our guest and their path into the world of data science, machine learning, and oil and gas. We're back with Dilshad Rehan, and we're going to get to know a little bit about Dilshad and his past and how he took his trajectory into data science, which was a pretty interesting one, all things considered. So why don't we start early on? You have a lot of kind of, I guess I'm just going to say, kind of cute stories that lead you to where you got today. So you have always wanted to be a scientist, always.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because I grew up basically without a lot of kids to play around with, and I was mostly hanging out with my sister. Funny, I know. But my sister was actually a couple of years older than me, and she would, every night, she would come home and then read from her textbooks. Now, when I was like in first grade or so, she would have her geography textbooks and she would be reading like, some lake in high up in the Andes, or, you know, the animals that are seen in Central America or something like that. I would listen so curiously to it and just keep all of those stuff in mind and go back to school. So pretty much I was basically learning things that were a few grades ahead of me all the time. It really helped me when it came to, like, we had a lot of trivia competitions that were going on in school, and every single one of them, I would just simply win because I just knew a lot more about most of these things than my peers. And that basically got me into a situation where my teachers loved me, and they always helped me, like, gave me more and more books and stuff. And I still recall this interesting book that I had about
the black hole book.
Yeah, the black hole book. It was called The Story of Gravitation, and it had all these really interesting pictures, like this artist's rendition of a black hole with like a black sphere and then this like luminous object spinning around. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. I couldn't understand anything, but I was like awestruck. I guess that's the right word to say. So and a lot of things, like that's the first time like I hearing about all these guys like Stephen Hawking and Karl Schwarzschild and Chandrasekhar, just these big names in physics that who were doing work that were completely beyond my understanding. And I was like determined, this is what I'm going to do. When I grow up, I'm going to become a physicist, and I'm going to invent things. And, you know.
How old were you when you got that? It was, so you decided pretty much when you, around that time when you were looking at that book?
Yeah. So I think I was probably 7 or 8.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And you stuck, and you basically stuck pretty closely along.
I mean, track. I would say, I think I stayed in STEM for sure. And I think I was in close contact with physics at least until the end of my undergrad.
So you decided when you were about 7 or 8 that you wanted to be a physicist.
Right.
Okay. And you stuck with that. So you went to, so when you went for undergrad, you changed a little bit.
Yeah. So there was like, that was partly a pragmatic decision. And also,
you went for mechanical engineering.
I went for mechanical
engineering. With a minor in physics.
Yes. Okay. I went for a major in mechanical engineering with a minor in physics. Now, engineering obviously was partly practical, and it was, again, not something that terribly bored me. And I still remember that the pulley problems that I was solving in high school, and pulley problems and lever and beams and all that. And I was like, okay, mechanical engineering is pretty similar. And there's thermodynamics in physics and thermodynamics in mechanical engineering. So it's, as far as engineering disciplines go, it was not too different from physics. And it was still a pragmatic major. And at the same time, I had seen a lot of people who majored in mechanical engineering in undergrad and went to physics for grad school. So I had that option. Okay. Yeah.
Why not just major in physics again, though? So you started with the black holes, 7 years old, and you kept with it. And then
I think one of them is definitely the pragmatism. And the other thing is became much more clearer to me as I went through college. And I took physics courses because one of the things that I think important is that a lot of the times the idea of doing science and actually doing science, I think there's quite a gap there.
Yeah.
And Again, even the idea of what is physics that we have in high school is completely different from the college level physics that you actually do, especially if you're doing physics as a physics major. So when I, for example, and I had my suspicions because I had talked to people who were physics majors and they told me that, oh, don't assume that it's going to be how it was in high school. So, and when I went to college, but I still wanted to keep that option open. And what I learned there is that to be able to do great work in physics, the kind of work that first got you interested in physics, you need to be...
An exceptional human being?
An exceptional individual.
Okay.
I mean, you have to be so far in the tail of the distribution that... Otherwise, I mean, you can always become a physicist, but do you... I don't know if you'll be excited about the stuff that you're able to do. So you can always... There's always the difference between what you're able to understand and what you're able to compose and come up with on your own. So that was something that I felt. And I realized that. And
You didn't think you were going to be the next Richard Feynman?
Oh, no. I mean, that's what I thought when I was growing up. Let's just go out there and find, you know, the theory that
changes everything.
Like, I'm going to show how gravity and quantum mechanics and all are the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. But that never happened. And
so you started taking the physics classes and you just kind of decided, maybe this is not the path that I want to go down anymore.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't feel a loss about it because, you have this idea that you want to try this. So instead of completely abandoning it, I kept with it. And then I was sure that, oh, perhaps I'm not great at this. And that's an important realization.
Yeah.
At the same time, that training in physics also helped me later on because the level of math and the rigor that you encounter in physics is completely different from what you have in engineering. And for example, for my physics minor, I took a class in quantum mechanics. Now, typically you wouldn't imagine quantum mechanics has anything to do with other engineering fields or even say data science.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that quantum mechanics makes extensive use of linear algebra. And this quantum mechanics text that I was working through, it just prepared me like in the best possible way for handling linear algebra problems. So when I came to grad school first, I did my PhD in aerospace engineering. I was looking at these problems of material stress and strain, which had a lot of matrices and matrix transformations. It was like cakewalk for me because I was prepared for that. Then later I come to data science and once again, everything that I'm encountering is already like pretty simple compared to what I was exposed to.
Yep.
So yeah.
So you went into your PhD and you were working in aerospace. And then what would you say was the kind of trajectory that put you onto the kind of data science track that made you?
So this is a really, really interesting thing. So I went into mechanical engineering, and then I jumped into aerospace engineering.
Actually, what even got you into aerospace engineering?
Okay, so I think at the end of sophomore year or so in my undergrad, I picked up a book called Chaos. It's a really interesting book, and I totally recommend anyone interested in the field to actually read it. It's a popular science book, and it had this really interesting history of what is known as chaos theory.
And you really enjoyed that book.
I totally enjoyed that book because partly because like the author is a great writer, and there are also a lot of interesting theories. And one of the most interesting things is that we, as in engineering, we always study linear systems, but literally almost all systems in nature are actually nonlinear. This is the behavior of nonlinear systems. This is how actually things behave in nature. So you need. So that was really interesting to me.
And that actually kind of put you on the path. That you wanted to get more into these kind of things. That's so funny how sometimes that happens. Sometimes you read, it was kind of similar for me actually, for like my grad school, there was a book. There was a genetics book that I read that kind of altered my trajectory a little bit.
Was that a textbook or a...
It was a pop science book. Okay, but so going back to you. You read that book. And you wanted to work on those problems.
Yeah, so I wanted to study those nonlinear dynamical systems. And typically those are, again, studied by physicists. But engineers do work on those. For example, if an engineering system is nonlinear and it exhibits chaotic properties, then how do you control it? Or things like that. So I went to one of the professors in my academic department, and he was working on nonlinear vibrations of aircraft wings. So we call it flutter. aeroelastic flutter, and so how to control it. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I did my undergrad thesis on that.
And is that, that's kind of similar to the chaos you have?
Yeah.
Take some measurements, and it's a very complex system, and you're trying to kind of over time figure out where.
So
things are, is that?
It is. So what happens is that those systems, if you try to control, it becomes really hard because just like prediction, controlling nonlinear systems is also really, really hard. So the entire field of control theory, I think, if I remember correctly, there are almost 90 different techniques to control a linear system. To control a nonlinear system, I think you have four.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really hard, again, due to, because the math is just so hard to
mm-hmm.
handle. And predictability is also an important problem in control, because if you can't predict a system, then you can't control it.
Mm, yeah.
So I did that for my thesis, and for grad school, I wanted to work in a similar field.
Mm-hmm.
And
your undergrad thesis, you were working on this control theory.
Yeah.
And then you went into the PhD, and you were.
I was actually working on similar. I was working on something similar, but instead of control, I was doing estimation, just the prediction problem again for a nonlinear system. So more aligned with my original interest. But at this time, until this point, I was doing purely, these systems are described in terms of differential equations. But at this point, suddenly it starts to become estimation, and that becomes more heavy in probability, because you're
mm-hmm.
trying to, because there's a lot of noise in everything that you're trying to study, and you have to take care of, you have to handle the randomness in there. So
mm-hmm.
that's where I get my, you know, first taste of like doing these probabilistic estimation firsthand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then from then on through grad school, it was like a lot of statistics and probability. And
yeah.
my entire grad school research is actually at the intersection of differential calculus and probability.
Which is interesting, because talking to more and more people,
mm-hmm.
what is, if you ask, you know, let's say, what is data science? What tool sets do you need? Yeah, these probability statistics, these kind of things obviously crop up over and over again.
Absolutely. And I think that gave me, like, those courses that I took in grad school in probability theory, stochastic estimation and processes,
mm-hmm.
I think they really prepared me for,
mm-hmm.
I think, even the geosteering project that we were talking about earlier.
Because there's certain words that seem to pop up over and over again in all of these problems and all these contexts. And, of course, you went for physics.
Yeah.
You have noise, for instance.
Yeah, noise, yes.
Probabilities, uncertainty.
Uncertainty.
Yeah. And things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even linear algebra that we were talking about, and if you remember, a lot of problems in data science, like PCA or all the eigenvalue problems that you encounter,
mm-hmm.
or singular value decomposition, all of these are applications of linear algebra.
Yeah.
And I think at the beginning of the Coursera course, the most popular data science course by Andrew, the Stanford.
Yeah.
Data science course, he actually mentions that the main prerequisite is actually linear algebra. Uh-huh. Is that central to data science?
Yeah.
So,
which is funny, because I mean, I remember when I took linear algebra, it was a little while ago. It was
okay.
when I was in undergrad, which was a little while ago. And I mean, I definitely remember just thinking, man, I don't like this, and there's just no applications of this. I can't really grasp the application. I was doing it as part of a computer science degree.
I see.
And of course, now, every day, it's a little easier to see day in, day out why that would be important. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, in data science, it seems to be more and more relevant.
Yeah, I would definitely say that. Yeah.
Okay, so then you ended up, so you finished that, and you're working on these nonlinear systems
yep.
and predicting, and then you went into data science from there.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm sure you're going to ask me why.
Sure. So what happened?
Well, I mean, so my grad school research, I was working on predicting the trajectory of space objects, satellites, and things like that. And it's just great, amazing, really nice, interesting work. It's going to be really important in the future. But only thing is that post 9/11 world, there are certain career trajectories that when you're a foreigner that you can't really pursue in the US,
mm-hmm.
or at least it's like limited, your opportunities are limited.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, even if I was not utilizing my domain knowledge in aerospace engineering,
mm-hmm.
I could still utilize all the knowledge that I've acquired in probability and statistics in something else. And
mm-hmm.
data science looked like the ideal fit.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. yeah, so you just kind of altered the, pretty much kind of like the application.
Yeah.
It was kind of just altering the application.
Exactly. Exactly. Uh-huh. So you have the same theory, but you're just moving from one application to the other.
The same theory and your tool set, you can just kind of migrate from one to the other.
So instead of like a space debris, it's the drill bit.
Yeah. So the thing that I find kind of interesting here in thinking about for people that maybe want to get into data science and this silly question of, you know, what is data science over and over and learning about data science, you are a data scientist. Nowhere in your history was there ever a mention of basically the words data science. And when you were doing your whole trajectory, which ultimately became the trajectory of becoming a data scientist, you know, I'm sure you never took a class that was like data science or anything like that.
Definitely not. You're exactly right. And I think if you look around here in this organization, a lot of people who are employed as data scientists are engineers coming from a lot of disparate backgrounds.
Yep, definitely. I can tell you for sure because I'm already meeting several, you know, doing this podcast.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yes. So, you know, right. And I think what would prepare you for a career, I mean, right now I think courses that are specialized for data science are popping up, but this field of estimating things from data or inference or prediction, this has been there for a while. And the tools that can prepare you for this, I think, that come from mathematics and probability, these are, people get exposed to these even in other engineering fields.
Yeah.
And I think, as I mentioned earlier, my training in quantum mechanics, for example, helped me a lot with the linear algebra part. I took a course in random vibrations as part of my undergrad research. It was suddenly first time I was actually using probability theory for, studying a dynamical system, for example. Mm-hmm. And that actually helped me in grad school and still helping me for my data science work. So I think it's really not necessary to actually have that.
Yeah. Like you could go for, I love how these classes, like learning about quantum mechanics, I think someone might not necessarily think, oh, data science sounds like something intriguing. Maybe I'm interested in going there. You wouldn't necessarily think, okay, well, I can take a quantum mechanics class and that'll still be preparing me for something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean, historically, I would think that computer science people have always been in this, in this field. And I think engineers, whoever are familiar with systems theory or linear algebra, I think they can directly easily come in. And another interesting thing is that whenever, like, for some fields, like basic fields, like mathematics or physics, you see that those people are employable in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
Like, you go to Wall Street, you see a ton of physics guys because they're simply good at quantitative stuff.
Right.
Yeah. If you have the right mathematical tools, I think data science is an exciting area with a lot of interesting problems. And,
And if somebody, and you wouldn't necessarily be closing your path if you were to, say, primarily pursue, let's say, physics.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, you always have these options, but if you want to be the next Feynman, that's a different question, but definitely work on some really interesting problems. And physics, math, other engineering fields, they definitely give you that training to actually be able to pick this up.
Yeah.
And
And ultimately, you could say maybe go kind of either way with that if you were to go down that one path that doesn't close it off for you.
Yeah, yeah. And adaptability, I think, it's obviously a really important skill too, right? I mean, if you can learn new things really fast and then also utilize whatever skill that you have and to actually, you know, solve a problem, then that's really important. And I think that is something that engineering or science education system should be preparing us for. And I think what's happening in data science clearly demonstrates that that's completely possible. Yeah.
Well, that's going to conclude this section. Okay. Thank you so much, Dilshad, for coming along.
Thank you very much. It was really a pleasure talking to you.
And thank you very much for listening. See you later.